rest of the guys willing in the malachas though, or no? Not necessarily.
No. Okay.
I don't know how to
have a...
How many
Okay, we're going to try to accomplish the impossible in the next 30 minutes to try to summarize all of Hilchos Beira. It took us about 2 weeks in Shia to talk about Beira, but we'll try to do our best. When we speak about the Malach of Beira, so there are two fundamentally different issues that we have to raise. The first issue that we have to discuss is whether we even have a situation of Beira in the first place. We don't have to be matter it if it's not us in the first place. But the first thing we have to try to figure out is, do we really have the scenario that's going to be an issue of Beira? Once we've established that we do have a potential Beira on our hands, then the question becomes, is there any way to do Beira b'derech heter? Is there any way to, in a sense, circumvent what would otherwise be an issue of Beira? So let's tackle the first half of the shiur first. Namely, do we have an issue of Beira b'chlal? So the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos Daf Ayin Dalet makes it quite clear that in order for Beira to be even on the radar screen in terms of it being a problem, is that the whole idea of a Beira means is that you have a tarobus, you have a mixture, and you have a mixture of what's called oichel and psoilus. You have some good things and some bad things all mixed together. The original Beira is described as you have a pile of grain, and you have some rocks that are mixed in together with the grain. So you have a balagan, you have a mixture, you have some good things, some bad things. That's considered to be a potential issue of Beira. So the question becomes, what exactly constitutes a tarevis of Eichlam Seilas to be posed as a problem of Bayram? So from the simple reading of the Gemara, one would have walked away with the conclusion that the only time that Bayram applies is when you have Mamish Eichel, you have good things, and you have Seilas, you have bad things. So come the Rishonim and the Medayek, at least most of the Rishonim and Medayek from a Lashon of a price that appears in Shabbos Nafayin Dalet, is that you can have Bayram in a Torah even if it's not an absolute objective Seilas, even if it's what we call a subjective psilis. Let's say you have two kinds of foods together. You have raisins and nuts that are mixed together. That's the example that everybody always gives. Raisins and nuts mixed together, or you have apples and oranges mixed together. You have a lot of things mixed together, and they're all fundamentally good. I like apples, you like oranges, or sometimes I like nuts, sometimes I like raisins, but right now I want to take one out from the other. So is that considered to be a problem of Beira altogether? So here it's what's called Shnei Minei Eichlim. Is that Beira? So most of the Rishonim assume that yes, that's how Shulchan Aruch paskens, that you can have a problem of Beira even though there's no objective psoilus. Why? Where's the psoilus over here? The psoilus is what I don't want. If right now I'm not interested in eating the nuts, so that's also considered by the halacha to be a tarevis of Eichel and quote-unquote psoilus. That's how we assume the halacha. Nevertheless, even though we assume that when you have a tarevis Shnei Minim, that's considered to be also a tarovus, that's also considered to be a quasi-Eichel and psoilus, the Pesachim have a further question: what exactly does that mean, Shnei Minim? How distinct, how different must the Minim be in order to pose a problem of Beira? So the Tumas Hadeshen, as quoted by the Rama, says that the whole idea of Beira by Shnei Minim Eichlim only makes sense when they're two distinct Minim, when they're different, they're nuts and they're raisins, they're very different from one another. But if you have all called Min Echad, it's all the same entity, the Eloat, some are bigger and some are smaller, and right now I want the bigger food, right now I want the smaller food, so there are more rice, and name the Tumas Hadeshen, that's Bechlau not considered to be Beira. So if you have, let's say, a lot of pieces of chicken all thrown together in a plate, one's a little bit bigger, one's a little bit smaller, Bechlau, that's not even in the parasha, Beira, nothing, you don't have to worry about anything, because that's not called a Tarov, it says no Echad, no Pesel. So even though not everyone agrees to this Ramah, the Taz disagrees, but most of the later posts can assume halacha like the Ramon, the Tumas Hadeshen. That's what we generally assume, that as long as everything is in Echad, that's okay. Nevertheless, the Poskim have very, very details in terms of how do you qualify something as Min Echad. At what point do you say it's already considered to be Shnei Minim? So nuts and raisin, that's clearly Shnei Minim. What if you have a lot of pieces of chicken, but they're made in different ways? You have one piece of fried chicken, and one piece of grilled chicken, and one piece of broiled chicken, and they're all mixed together. It's one big balagan. So should we say, well, they're all chicken? Or should we say, no, they're not all chicken. They're considered to be different kinds of chicken. So most of the poskim assume that those kinds of criteria, such as taste, such as maybe even color, texture, things like that, may in fact contribute to declaring something to be shneiminim. And if that's the case, then we're going to have a potential problem of bayer on our hands. So again, we didn't say it's going to always be ulcer. We're going to second half of the shiur try to figure out ways to be matir bayer. But first half, we have to make sure we have a problem to start with. So even though, again, we have somewhat of a chumradic definition in terms of shneiminim, that we're not willing to say that just because there's no objective psalas, therefore there's no problem. We assume halacha like Taisus, like Rav Chanan, says the Shulchan Aruch, that even shneimine ochlin is a problem because we view one as being the eichel and one as being the psalas, depending on what I want right now. But afa pichein, when it's minechar, we're not going to be machmir. But within minechar, it's not so poshut. You have things that people may think of them perhaps as minechar, but if they're really different in terms of taste and other criteria, that would qualify perhaps as shneiminim. The post can then have a further shayla. Mechas chinuch raises the shayla. What's the din if you have two foods in front of you and they're physically minechar, but they're halachli shneiminim? One is also, one is mutter. So what's the din? Would that qualify as shnei minim or not? So he has a shayla about if you have a whole basket of fruit, and some of the fruit is orla, not the most common shayla of manazet, some of the fruit is orla, some of the fruit is not orla. Would that qualify as shnei minim, or does that qualify as menecha? That's already a global shayla that permeates all of the Shabbos. Do you view the Shabbos through the eyes that we call the Beis Medrash, or do you view it through the eyes of the kitchen? It means if you ask most people, the average person in the kitchen says, this is an apple, this is an apple, it's all the same. But those who really have their halachic antenna up, so they'll realize this is not an apple, this is a treif apple, this is a kosher apple. So again, that's a very, very long Mr. Shaila, again, it goes beyond the issue of Bayer per se. The post give a quote that says, a possible chumra, maybe if you have a pile of matzahs together, and some of the matzahs are broken and some of them are whole, and you're trying to fish around looking for lecha mishnah, so maybe that's considered to be like halachic eichelim seilas, because I can't use the broken matzahs, ta treifa matzah. It would be a chavistic matzah, that would be a much more serious problem in Pesach. But if it's a broken matzah, so some achareinim want to be machmer, that's also considered to be a chashash of shnei minim. So again, you have nuances as to what point we draw the line in terms of what's called menechad, what's considered to be shnei minim. But again, the whole idea behind Bayer is Bayer only applies when you have a kind of a tarevis, when you have a mixture, when you have things that are clearly demarcated one from another, the chari that wouldn't be considered to be Bayer. Again, it comes with somewhat of a nuanced call. At what point do you say that the things are really mixed together? So the Aruch HaShulchan raises a question, which already was raised before him, but he puts it into a formulation that we need for us for right now. Aruch HaShulchan raises the question, how should we view Bayer on non-food items? If you have a lot of silverware thrown together, you have a lot of clothing thrown together, you have a lot of svarim thrown together, should that be subject to the din of Bayer or not? So the Taz already, a couple hundred years before, writes that he thinks there would be a problem with Bayer, even on non-food items. He has a right from Rashi, Masech HaShabbos, that Bayer is not limited to food. But the Aruch HaShulchan raises the question, Im Kain, so then would one say that any time you have a bunch of silverware thrown together, that's Bayer? Every time you have svarim thrown on the table, that's Bayer? So he suggests there's one possibility that maybe not. He thinks that maybe when you have non-food items, so if they're clearly demarcated, I can see clearly this is a Rashba and this is the Mishnah Berurah, this is the Chumash and this is the Mishnayos. I can tell right away what the things are. Maybe that's not considered to be a Taravis, and maybe it wouldn't be a problem. If that would be true, that would be a tremendous kula. You have pages and pages and pages of all the man and the svarim that assume that there's Bayer Gorma with their ice and kalim and silverware and clothing and everything's a big bala, everything's Bayer. So the Aruch HaShulchan is not so sure that that's true. Right? So he thinks that maybe a lot of these things are considered to be a Nikarm B'fnei HaTzman, and therefore they wouldn't be opposed to the problem of Bayer. We try not to rely on that. We don't have to. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't quote that. So the Mishnah Berurah just quotes the Taz Kipshuto, that there would be a potential problem of Bayer on non-food items, that we don't automatically call them Nikarm Kalechem B'fnei Hatzmo. But again, as we'll see as we go on, there may be other Heter, other coolest, that we won't leave you with Yisurim yet. Well, maybe some Yisurim, but at least some coolest at the end also. Again, so the basic theory behind the institution of Bayer is that there has to be some kind of a Tarov, some kind of a mixture, and the question becomes, at what point do we say this mixture exists? Comes the Gemara in Masechah Shabbos Nafayin Dalad in the Sugya of Bayer and tells us that even in a worst case scenario, even when you have a case of a situation of Bayer, if certain conditions combine together, so then Bayer is no longer considered to be a problem. That is in effect a way to overcome any potential problem of Bayer. So there are three conditions that Chazal single out, which potentially contribute towards being matir nisr Bayer. One of the conditions Chazal speak about is whether a person is doing it via da'ayim or whether he's using a kli. Is he doing the act of Bayer with his hands, or is he doing it using some kind of a utensil, particularly a utensil that's designated for acts of Bayer, like a sifter or something like that? That would be the worst case scenario. So that's one factor the Gemara speaks about. Then another factor the Gemara speaks about is whether you're doing an oichel mitech psalis, or whether you're doing the psalis mitech oichel. Are you taking the good from the bad? Again, either you're dealing with real bayer or with one of these quasi-bayers. Are you taking the good from the bad? Are you taking the bad from the good? That's also a factor. If you're taking the good from the bad, that's significantly less of a problem. Pseilas ben oichel is significantly more of a problem. And the third condition that Gemara speaks about is it being done l'alter? Is it being done for immediate use or for later type of use? Hopefully we'll define what that term means as we go on. So the Gemara says these three factors now combine together to potentially be matir in a sabayra. So there is a big machlekes in Rishonim about when we say these factors combine, does that mean we need all of the factors present, or maybe two of the factors, maybe one, depending on which factors may combine with which? We usually assume the Shulchan Aruch paskens the Chumrah that all three of the conditions have to be met. So we're going to work with that assumption that we're not going to ever be matir bayir unless all three conditions are met. We may have watered down versions of what those conditions are, but in terms of in the world of theory, so you have to have the three factors together in order to declare the bayir is no longer a problem. So again, the three conditions being that it has to be a yad versus a kli, it has to be oich metechem seilas, and it has to be for immediate use. Where did this come from? The Sisrei Torah, that these three conditions combine together and hocus pocus, everything becomes mutter. Whoever heard such a thing? So the already some of the Rishonim have this idea that these three conditions are not just huchsav lotayimus, but they make a lot of sense. That when you have these three conditions together, so that it no longer resembles the malacha, it's no longer derech malacha, it's now called derech achila. Everybody, you're allowed to eat on Shabbos. We haven't asked that yet. You're allowed to eat on Shabbos. In the process of eating, so inevitably there's going to be some acts of bayir taking place in the process of eating also. So I'm eating something in my mouth, I spit something out, so that nobody would say that's all, sir. So the derech achila, obviously the Torah permits on Shabbos. So it could be that when you do bayir in such a manner that it's really just a part of the eating process, it's so close to the eating process that I'm taking really what I want to eat, and I'm not even using a kli, I'm doing all these things together, so it's no longer considered to be a shame malacha, it's not considered to be a shame achila to it. So that's the way at least some Rishonim present this kula. Other Rishonim may give a slightly different nuance as to explain why these conditions combine together, but generally the place can work with these guidelines, with this framework that's considered to be derech achila. But it's important for us to single out each one of these principles and understand exactly what the parameters of these principles are, because the existence of all three of them is going to be good, and the lacking of one of these three is going to be a serious problem. When I say serious, the way the Shulchan Aruch passes, it's going to be a shalom amshav deraisa. So let's see if we can go through each one of these principles. So the first principle that Gemara speaks about is the usage of a biyad in contrast to a kli. The Gemara speaks about different types of kelim. Of a kli, what's called a kli miyuchel lekach, in contrast to a kli she'ena miyuchel lekach. A kli miyuchel lekach means like a sifter, a strainer, something that's a normally used for bayir, that's the worst of the worst. That's a mamash nisadir aisa. If you use a kli she'ena miyuchel lekach, that's still a problem, but maybe only a problem with the rabbanu. But if you use yadayim, assuming that the other conditions are met, so then a yad is going to be the greatest thing in the world. What exactly do we mean when we compare and contrast a kli to a yad? What exactly is a yad? So we think that a yad means with my hands. That's what I thought a yad is. So comes Rav Moshe Netshuva and writes that not necessarily. Sometimes a person could use a quote unquote a kli, but he's using the kli as merely an extension of his hands. The yad arich bedami. He really would use his hands. And the usage of the kli is not assisting in the act of bayir at all. The only reason why he's using the hands is the only reason why he's not using his hands is because he has manners and it's not nice to sit with your hands. He doesn't follow that opinion. There was the famous joke about the person who was sitting and eating a certain food on Shabbos using his hands. So they asked him, why is he using his hands? So he responded, "Minigav asayni biyadayni." That's the way our forefathers ate with their hands, so we eat with our hands also. But that's not what Rav Moshe did. So Rav Moshe said that you're allowed to use a spoon. If you want to use a spoon, just you shouldn't get your hand dirty. So that's not considered to be a kli means when you're using a strainer. A kli means you're using a sifter. A kli means when maybe even a fork, depending on how the fork is being used. If it's being used with Torah's Borer, that's called a kli. But if you're just using a spoon to do something you could just as easily have done with your hands, it's just for convenience, for politeness reasons, you don't want to use your hands, that's still considered to be a dime. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach has an even bigger chiddush in the realm of kli versus yad. Rav Shlomo Zalman, going back to what we said before, that this is not a halacha mashma sinai, that yad versus kli, the idea of yad versus kli is just a way of describing whether it's derech achila, whether it's derech malacha. You could potentially have a situation where you have a kli that, even though it's a kli, and it really is doing an act of straining, but ein l'cha derech achila gadol mizeh, this type of a kli is always associated with the eating process, it would never be associated with the straining process. how do you know? Hi, but it's a kli. Hamiyuchel lekach. It's a kli that's used for straining. The Shlomo Zalman says, but it's a type of a kli that you would always use in the dining room. You're sitting on your table. This is not something you would prepare weeks in advance, days in advance, hours in advance. This is a type of a kli that's associated with the process of eating. You always do this as you're about to put the food into your mouth. So Shlomo Zalman suggests that if you have such a kli, so that's not considered to be a kli. Hamiyuchel lekach. That's considered to be also basically like your hands, even though it's clearly not in your hands, but the idea of being kli is not so important. The word kli is not the giveaway. It's really derech malacha versus derech achiva. So some examples that Rosh Hashanah suggests is there is a whole deal in the poskim about the using tea bags on Shabbos. The primary issue of tea bags on Shabbos is the bishul issue. Let's leave that for someone who's going to try to put bishul into a half hour. That's even harder than putting beer into a half hour. But one of the other issues the poskim raised about tea bags is that when you take the tea bag out, so you usually let some of the tea drip out through the tea bag, so the liquid is coming out of the tea bag, but the tea bag is basically a sifter. It's preventing the leaves from sifting through, from coming down as well. So maybe that's considered to be an act of bayra. Maybe that's an act of bayra with a tea, and that should be a disaster. So Shlomo Zalman suggests that maybe one can be makel. Not everyone agrees, but maybe one can be makel, that that's considered to be a type of a quote-unquote kli, but everybody associates that with the shas achi, the shas shtia. You don't prepare the tea weeks in advance. You prepare the tea, except for the people who are preparing tea on Friday because they don't want to violate bishul, but that's a different problem. But normal people, when they drink their tea, so they make the tea right away. They drink it right away, so maybe that's not considered to be b'taras akli. Maybe that's also considered to be derech achiv. That's a suggestion that he has. Then Rosh Hashanah also writes, if that's the case, so there's another issue that that some poskim raised a red flag about in terms of bayrer, a salt shaker. You have a salt shaker, so some of those people put rice into the salt shakers in the summertime to absorb the moisture. So otherwise the salt gets very clumpy. So when you start to pour the salt out, so the rice gets caught by the holes, so maybe that's a shallow bayrer. It's a shallow bayrer with the kli, separating the salt from the rice. So Shlomo Zalman writes that according to my svara, that would pashas also be mutter, because that type of a salt shaker is a kli. It's a kli hamiyuchah v'achila. So that by definition is considered to be a derech achila. So again, that's a suggestion that Shlomo Zalman says. So a couple of them you see both from emotion from Shlomo Zalman that when we speak about the word kli, kli is not an absolute. Doesn't always mean kli is also. Kli has to be determined: is it derech malacha or is it derech achila? The second condition.
Yeah,
I don't think so. I think that's just a technicality. I don't think that's not a bayer issue. When you're using a kli to help you in bayer, that's where the problem begins. So the second condition that the Gemara speaks about, and we assume in Shulchan Aruch is an absolute necessity, that's the separation of oichel mitoich psoilas. If you switch the order, if you do psoilas from oichel, so that's going to be a problem, no matter what other conditions are met. So again, not all Rishonim agree to that. Some Rishonim hold that if you have the other conditions, so maybe we could forego the oichel mitoich psoilas, but in Shulchan Aruch we don't accept that. We assume that you have to have oichel mitoich psoilas. Notwithstanding the fact that it's an absolute avoich mitoch psoilas, there is a din that stares us in the face that appears in the Ramah at the end of Siman Shilchaf Aleph that caused a whole tumult about the requirement or perhaps the lack thereof sometimes of avoich mitoch psoilas. The Ramah is based on a group of Rishonim who quote Yerushalmi. The Rishonim Masechah Shabbos in the Sugya in Klal Gadol speaks about the issue of peeling garlic on Shabbos. The simple reading of the Rishonim is that if a person removes the peel off of a garlic on Shabbos, that's an issa deraisa, and the Rishonim uses the phrase of bayrer. So it's just interesting to note when you're learning the Sugya of bayrer, so not all the Rishonim quote this Rishonim, and there were actually some poskim who claim that we don't even follow this Rishonim. It's like Yalocha, the Chashulchan writes, he doesn't believe, the Rambam doesn't poskim like it, he doesn't believe most of the Rishonim even accept this Rishonim. Maybe this is not considered to be bayrer at all. Why would it not be Barer? So one good reason why it's not Barer is because there's no real Taroivus. We started off this Shia by saying Barer is presupposing that the two things are mixed together. Why should you consider the peel of a garlic to be mixed together with the garlic? It's just sitting on the outside of the garlic. It's not mixed with the garlic. So again, that's a question, whether you accept the Yerushalmi or not. But Lamaisa the Ramah does. So putting aside the Lomdus, there are more quotes from the Yosef quotes from the Smach, many Gedolei Rishonim quote this Yerushalmi l'halocha. So the Ramah also quotes from the Rishonim that b'medivam mamurim that you're not allowed to peel the garlic. That's only if you want to peel the garlic for later on in the day. But if you want to peel the garlic for immediate use, that would be perfectly okay because you've met the criteria of bayer beheter. How did you meet the criteria of bayer beheter? We'll go through the list. The three criteria, well, you have to use your hand. Good, so I'm using my hand. If I'm going to peel the garlic with my hand. Number two, I'm doing it for immediate use. Good. So I met that criteria. But the other criteria, namely, that it has to be eich mitav pseilas, how are you meeting that? I'm taking the peel off the garlic. It's kind of hard to take the garlic out of the peel. I have to peel the peel off the garlic. So the Rambam writes, that's okay. As long as it's being done out, that's hetter gomer. It's pilei ploim. In the beginning of Simon Shinya test, where the regular dinner of bayir appear, so we pass in Shulchan Aruch that you need all three conditions. We will never forego the condition of eich mitav pseilas. When it comes to peeling garlic, all of a sudden everything becomes a hetter gomer. So what's pshat? So the Bir Halacha in two different places has two different biurim as to how to explain this phenomenon. Why is it that on the one hand where it's chayk v'layava, you have to have the three conditions, and over here because the middle condition just fell by the wayside? What happened to eich mitaych pseilas? So the Bir Halacha in the more popular piece in the end of Simon Shulchan Aruch, where the Rambam appears. So the Bir Halacha quotes from already earlier Echavim from the Bar Mordechai, who already gave the Teretz, that said that this condition of Eichel mitach psoilas in contrast to psoilas mitach Eichel is not an absolute. Eichel mitach psoilas is a way of gauging, it's a way of measuring whether it's derech achila or whether it's derech melacha. That's the whole yisod. All these conditions are ways of gauging that distinction. So comes the Bir Halacha in the name of the Bar Mordechai and says, that we say, if you took psoilas min ha'eichel, that resembles melacha. That's if you have the option of doing one or the other. If I could choose, I have two things in front of me, I could just as easily take the eichel from the psoilas or the psoilas from the eichel, and if I take the eichel from psoilas, that's called derech achila. If I take the psoilas from the eichel, it's called derech melacha. That's both options are on the table. But if I don't have both options, it's impossible for me to take the oichem psoilas. It's not shaykh physically to take oichem psoilas. So then, by definition, the psoilas min oichem becomes the derech achila. So it's not pshat that we're foregoing the condition of oichem mitav psoilas. Is that this alpidin is the oichem mitav psoilas? There's no other way. It's eyev shebalav hochi. So whenever it's eyev shebalav hochi, so even psoilas min oichem is labeled in halacha as being the derech achila. That's the popular answer that the Bir Halacha quotes. Then the Bir Halacha in Simon Shinya Tes has a very complicated other answer, based himself on some earlier poskim, who suggests that maybe there's a difference when the eichel and psoilas are mechubar biyachad. If the eichel and the psoilas are mechubar biyachad, physically, naturally connected to one another, so maybe we have a right to say that kol zman, that they're physically connected, and I'm just separating what's a physical connection, a natural connection, maybe that's called the tikkun eichel be'alma, maybe that's more susceptible to being called derech achila, and even though I'm taking psoilas biyachad, that's also okay. That means this is somehow a different kind of a taroves. A tarovus with dvarim mechubarim yachad somehow is more kal. That's considered to be more of a derech achila than an artificial kind of a tarovus. Those are the two different biurim that the Bir Halacha gives. There are nafkaminas ladina between the biurim. The din of the Rambam is right. We pass in the halacha. You're allowed to peel the garlic for immediate use. Therefore, you're allowed to peel your banana for immediate use. Are you taking the peel from the banana rather than vice versa? Either because it's eif shemavochi or because it's mechubarim yachad v'derech teva. Whatever the answer of the Bir Halacha is, one of the two answers is correct, but there are nafkaminas ladina between the two answers. Let's just think through quickly just some basic nafkaminas. The Bir Halacha discusses what would be the din if a person is eating a piece of fish and there are bones in the fish on Shabbos. Are you permitted to take the bones away from the fish? Or do you have to be careful to take the fish away from the bones? If you're eating a piece of chicken, do you have to be careful to take the chicken off the bone? Or can you basically remove the bone, thereby holding on to the chicken? So do you have to be machmed on this eich mitav pseilas or not? So the Mishnah Berurah makes the calculation. He says, well, you're doing it for right away, and you're doing it biyadayim, and even though you may be using a fork, but again, like Ramosha's, that's all called biyadayim. The question is this pivotal condition of eich mitav pseilas? Must you meet this condition of eich mitav pseilas in order to be matured or not? So lechor, it depends on these two biurim. If you go with the biur that's eif shebalav hachi, so that's true by peels, because you can't get to the fruit without removing the peel. Over here, I can get the chicken without pushing away the bone. I get out the fit. Takes me a little longer, but I can do it. It's possible to do it. So it is eif shebalav hachi. So then maybe I have to insist on eich mitav pseilas. But if you go with the other beer of the Bir Halacha, that it's muta because it's somehow a chibur b'teva, it's mechuba b'yachad, and therefore it's more tigreicha, more derech achila, then even that would be permissible as well. Or you have another interesting nafkamina. You know, when we're younger, when we first go to camp on Shabbos, it's sleepaway camp, so the first thing they tell us is that the worst thing you could possibly do on Shabbos is to take out watermelon seeds out of the watermelon. That's a chul Shabbos deraisa. It's up there with driving a car. Then when you get a little bit old, you realize that's far from that. That's probably, according to many pasuk, with tet gomer. What's the shaila about removing the watermelon seeds? So the chor, it's the same shaila. I'm doing it with my hands, and I'm doing it right before, I'm not preparing it from hours in advance. I'm doing it right before a meeting. I'm doing it with my hands, but I'm doing the pesalus bina oichel. So if you hold like the popular answer of the bi'alocha, that pesalus bina oichel, we can only be matir if it's efshe b'lav hachi. Here it's efshe b'lav hachi. I can take the piece of water bottle, put it into my mouth, and eat it, and then spit out the pits. So it's efshe b'lav hachi. So then removing the pits is not called derech achila. But if you go with the second part of the bi'alocha, then whenever it's mechubarim yachad, that's always called tikkun reichel bi'alma, then it would be mutl lechetchila to remove the seeds also. So again, we're not advocating that kula. The Mishnah Berurah just writes there are some who rely on this kula. So he writes a libutz chus. The Mishnah Berurah is such a tzaddik, it bothered him that people should be mechal Shabbos. So he writes a whole shekel Torah to explain away why the people who are taking their bones out of the fish are not going to be mechal Shabbos. They're relying on my shekel Torah that's called, that's also good, that's also called derech achila, even though it is efshir b'lav hachi. So again, yeshem ilusmach. So those people who are removing the seeds without spitting them out, you know, machine gun fire style. So that would be they were relying on that b'halacha. When we speak about the separating between oichel and psoilas, there is a big question in the poskim. What if instead of separating oichel and psoilas, what if I take a little bit of the oichel with the psoilas as well? So the line of demarcation between the oichel and the psoilas is not an absolute line. I take a little bit of the oichel together with the psoilas. So does that solve any problems? So the simple reading of the Taz is that that's okay. The Taz speaks about removing a fly from the soup. So the Taz says that as long as you take a little bit of the soup together with the fly, so he thinks that should be all right. So the pashtus of the Taz is that because I'm not taking psoilas b'yoichel, I'm taking oichel and psoilas b'yoichel. So that's perfectly okay. So the Chazanish claims that Taz never said that, and he redefines what the Taz said, and even the whole different story. Chazanish says, lo shemana davazim yoichel, there should be such a heter. But the Rav Poskim, Mishnah Berurah sounds like he's matherit, and Chazanish was adamantly opposed to this. So again, different opinions within this, within the oichel mitoich psoilas story. The Bir Halacha has another tremendous chiddush in terms of malacha bayrar, in terms of psoilas b'yoichel. He says that when you have a taroves of shnei minim, and he started out by saying, basically everything is edible. There's no real psoilas here. Everything is edible. It's only considered to be psoilas because right now I don't want it. So the Bialocha says that b'medavar b'murim, that's when it's all mixed together. But if you have piles of things, one on top of another, you have like a pile of meat. So there's pastrami, and there's corned beef, and there's turkey. And I want to get to the one underneath, so I'm not really being beirer, the bad one, the quote-unquote bad one, the psoilas. I'm just being moving the bad one. I don't know what the word is. I'm being masir me'alav. I'm not actually being beirer between the two. I'm just trying to get to what's on the bottom. So the be'alav is a big chiddush that that's mutter. So that's already a lot of lumdus why exactly that should be so. It's hard to put that into the next 30 seconds, why that be'alav should or should not be so. But it's a long, long be'alav. It's a machine test where he develops this possible chiddush when you're dealing with everything's royal lechila anyway. And it's just a question of getting to the ones on the bottom. Maybe one could be removed just to get to the point at the bottom. It's not being done by derech b'ayr. The third condition that's absolutely necessary is that it has to be miyad, the altar. It has to be for immediate use. How immediate use is considered to be immediate use? So one of the Rishonim, the Mordechai quotes the Lashon from one of the Rishonim, Lashon of Lefi Shah. It has to be within an hour before the meal. So Moshe Feinstein writes in a tshuva that he thinks that that's not really what it means. It doesn't mean hour like 60 minutes. It doesn't mean Shosvanius. It was just a Lashon Mushal, just a borrowed phrase. It means right before the meal. The bottom line is, says Ramesh, it has to be the last thing you do right before the meal. That's considered to be Le'altar. So let's say if you want to do acts of bayra, whatever they are. Maybe setting the silverware according to some point skim, or you want to do peelings, or whatever the different acts of bayra you want to do. And you want to do it at 11 o'clock, and then you want to take a walk, and then come back and eat lunch at 11:30. That's a problem, says Rav Moshe. Even though it's technically within the quote-unquote hour, but that's not the last activity. It should be right as everyone's home from shul, everyone's getting edgy ready, and you're about to start the meal. That's the time to start to do all the bayra. Sometimes you do a little bit more time than that. Okay, see, 10 minutes before, 15, whatever it is. But it should be the immediate activity. Shouldn't be separated between what you're doing, the act of bayir, and the eating of the meal. The Ramah writes that once you did bayir for something at the beginning of the meal, or right before the meal, then even if it's for dessert, let's say I'm not going to get to this part of the meal for another 3 hours, while you're eating 3 hour Shabbos meals, another story, but not for now. But even though it's a very, very long break, but it's all part of the Osa Suda, Osa Baimud, so the Ramah assumes that that's okay. The Bir Halacha has a big chiddush in the Sugya Beira where he suggests, he claims that some Rishonim hold that there's even better than some Samachos Uda. That even if you have what's called the Yad Lepeh, If you're doing something, mamish, as you're eating, I'm literally taking the food, the psalas out, and I'm putting it right into my mouth. So the Be'alocha quotes, claims that a Ramban holds that that's even better than Samach Hasuda. And if that's true, then everything's mutter. Even psalas mutter, oichel's mutter, it's mamish, ahet the gomer, that's bechlal not considered to be a maise boira. The Be'alocha himself claims that not all the Rishonim agree to this, and he leaves that's a little bit of a tzarchiyah. The Chazanish says, he doesn't think anybody ever said it, he rereads the Ramban, he doesn't think anyone ever said such a thing. But the Be'alocha is willing to entertain this as a possibility, and others picked up on this, others really paskin this way, there are different opinions about this. If that would be so, that whatever's beyond the pet is mamish mutter legamrei, so then that would be a tremendous kula in terms of going back to the issues eating the fish, eating the chicken, that even though it is tzolos mitachachal, you don't need the Mishnah Berurah's kula from before. If the Ramban really said that, we pass like the Ramban perhaps, that miyad lepez had to go more. That ain't lechad erachachil gomer mizeh. So even psalos with achaichel would be mutter. Going back to the watermelon in the pits, the person who's holding the watermelon in his hands is flipping out the pits. Ain't lechad erachachil gomer mizeh. So we have a few different stadim to be made up by the fish, a few different stadim to be made up by the watermelon. We're not advocating necessarily following all these coolers, but at least those who are doing it are definitely have what place to rely on. So upon him, we tried really to break up Bayer into two parts. First, do we have an issue of Bayra? So the issues of the Nechav, Shneminim, and Oichlin, and Kalim, etc. And then the second half of the Shear is in terms of ways to circumvent Bayra, putting together these three conditions, when we're sometimes Meichel on some of the conditions, perhaps yeah, perhaps no, what exactly the details of all these three conditions are.